underneath the concrete jungle of Kalamazoo. Anarchy on the airway.
The People's Power Hour on 89.1 WIDR.
Now, he's a spoiled brat. Tried the nice guy who's cooperating with the president.
All right, you're listening to WIDR 89.1 Kalamazoo. This is the People's Power Hour. And as we told you a minute ago, we have with us from the Community Solution, Megan Quinn and Pat Murphy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. And we had Pat and Megan on, was it a month and a half, month, 2 months ago, talking about peak oil?
Yes.
And a conference that they had. So welcome back. I guess I thought we'd start off just to let the people who did not catch our last interview know exactly what peak oil is. Maybe they haven't heard of that. So can you, I don't know, explain peak oil a little bit?
Sure. Well, peak oil refers to the point in time when global oil production will reach its maximum. And what that means is that from that point on, we'll have declining oil availability. Now, up to now, we've had increasing amounts of oil available to us as a society every year, and we've built our entire society based upon that assumption. So the peak, which will occur in the next few years here, really means a fundamental change in the conditions of our society and our economy.
Okay. So peak oil is definitely a very important issue. I mean, as you said last time, that all of our food and everything like that is transported with petroleum, basically.
I want to comment one thing. Our food is not only transported, but it's grown with petroleum products. And the standard number is it takes 10 calories of fossil fuels to produce 1 calorie of food energy for us. That's not only the oil for transportation, but for drying, for the tractors, for the plows, and then it's the natural gas for the fertilizers that give us the high yields we have.
Yeah, and it's good thing you mentioned that. I mean, we really do have a high dependency on petroleum. I mean, we are a petroleum society. So I guess it's not hard to believe that the mainstream media has actually been picking up peak oil a little bit and talking about it. I know a couple of magazines have talked about it. Even Oprah has mentioned oil. Do you think that you know, the mainstream media covering peak oil will do anything to help solve the future oil crisis?
I think it's good that people start to learn about what it is, and that's probably the main contribution for the media, is to make peak oil a household word. Now, the media, because of their nature, is always going to try to give a balanced view. So if someone says peak oil is coming, someone else will say, no, peak oil is not coming. But it's just bringing it forth and raising the consciousness of the people. But I don't think the media is really going to provide any solutions.
Yeah, I think the media typically just kind of latches on, whether it be wind or solar. You know, they hear one thing that, we have enough wind to, you know, take care of America's energy use 4 times over. They'll just print that, and everyone will think it's okay. They don't have to do anything. But our message is that people really need to start looking at peak oil, how it's going to affect their lives, and start making changes.
All right. I don't know. Did you want to kind of talk about some of those changes that people can make right now?
I think our perspective, and we've been studying this for 4 years now, and we've gone deep into all the alternatives. It's not at all clear that we'll ever be able to provide any mix of alternatives to oil and then later natural gas, which will peak probably within a decade after oil does. It isn't obvious that there ever will be a way to provide it, and that really means we're going to have to reduce our use of fossil fuels. We can pick up some things with efficiency, but the generally efficiency grows at 1% a year, but peak oil will be depleting at about 2% a year. So we think that people have got to start taking measures to reduce their consumption of fossil fuels, and that's what we focus on from many, many different directions.
And so, I mean, you mentioned earlier that, you know, our food is grown with petroleum and transported with petroleum. What can What can average people do to, you know, cut back on that?
Well, I think supporting local growers, specifically organic growers, will really help in doing that. Also, you know, starting to grow your own food, learning about that, and also to dry and to can and preserve your own food. I think that's all very important.
And also to start eating food at the lowest level as possible, because a lot of our packaged foods, not only do they take, say, 10 calories for the food, but because of the high degree of packaging and preparation and freezing of foods, the more the food is manufactured, of which a good part of our diet now comes from these manufactured foods, the more energy we're using. So people start eating sort of whole foods or foods they make themselves, they're going to also save energy in that way.
And they'll save energy and healthcare costs down the road as well.
How can we convince people to adopt some of these changes?
Well, I think it really has to come from them. I think providing the information of peak oil and some solutions of what people have done is important, but everyone really needs to take responsibility for their own lives here. And, you know, we can't tell people to just change. I think they'll come around to it themselves when they're exposed to the issue, and that they want to prepare for themselves and their families.
Don't you think, though, that by the time that some people change, that it may be too late, or that the changeover to more sustainable local economies is going to be a real hard shift for a lot of people?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of hardship no matter how you cut it. And the longer we wait to take the action, the harder it's going to be. So we can't really control that. What we can only do is tell people what's going to happen, then start giving them alternatives. The people that make it early, they start making those changes, and they're not going to be nearly as affected by it as people who wait till the last minute.
What advice do you have for, you know, people who have to commute, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes to work in a car every day?
Well, I think immediately people will start carpooling, start looking for alternative transportation like mass transit buses, and if they're not available, pushing for them to become available. Also biking and walking if possible. But in the long term, people are going to have to start working locally, not just telecommuting, but actually having local occupations that serve their local communities.
I think those are all very good suggestions. For those of you out there who want to visit the Community Solution, their website is communitysolution.org, if you want to look up some of that. I just wanted to talk about the Gas Act, which just passed in the House. It doesn't look like the Senate's going to pass it exactly, but I don't know. The Republicans held this act open for 40 minutes for voting to actually get Republican representatives to change their votes. And do you think legislation like this is hurting our chances of surviving peak oil?
I think it gives a sense of a certain amount of comfort. For example, ANWR, which may take years to develop, the estimate is it will produce maybe 1 million barrels a day, but we're currently using 20 million barrels a day. So even though we do develop ANWR and even maybe go into some of these other areas off the coast, all those projections are not going to in any way start to meet what we're currently importing. One thing I think it is important for people to understand is that trying to protect ANWR is best protected by people cutting back their energy consumption. Because there's kind of an issue here of say, protecting ANWR, but exploiting the and destroying the Delta area in Nigeria. So it's a certain element of hypocrisy in trying to maintain your pristine areas while you're importing it from other devastated areas in the world.
That's another thing for people to consider, too, just these environmental impacts that are huge from oil exploration and exporting oil, too, that people maybe don't realize the cost of me driving my car burning, you know, so much gasoline. Just there are massive environmental impacts that it seems like people don't fully realize.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that the Gas Act does is remove some environmental provisions. And I think that's just the beginning of what we see, especially if people start turning towards coal to liquids, or, you know, people talk about the hydrogen economy. Well, we're going to be burning coal for that, and we really need to look at the consequences of that.
Hydrogen fuel is not really the solution that it's been proposed to be, is it?
No, hydrogen, I believe, is fading from the scene because all the initial commitments made, I think Ford said there'd be 140,000 cars, hydrogen cars on the road by now when they first invested in Ballard Systems in Canada, who really did a lot of work in the fuel cell. But these are coming out. The cost of these cars are still running over $1 million apiece. And I believe what's going to happen is the fuel cell car is, within the next few years, going to have the same fate as the electric car was that we started in California and kind of put that to bed about 5 or 6 years ago. So I believe that the focus now is, of course, moving to hybrids and to the hybrid diesel, and that's what's going to be the automobile company's response to peak oil.
But even then, I mean, hybrid diesel, when it comes down to it, we're still using a resource that's non-renewable. I mean, isn't that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing about, we can't just switch to hybrids overnight. The vehicle fleet in the U.S. turns over, 20, 25 years? So there's no really immediate solutions. People that, you know, need to buy a new car, a hybrid is definitely recommended. And Pat actually has a hybrid, two hybrid cars. But in terms of a long-term solution, cutting back, conservation is really the number one most important thing.
All right. As far as peak oil goes, recently the oil minister, the energy minister of Russia, Viktor Khrushchenko, said that Russian oil output may peak in 2010. I know there are a lot of discrepancies over when, you know, peak oil may exactly happen, but do you think this means that it's sooner rather than later?
Well, I think that's very important that Russia actually gave their date of peak, which is 2010, and that's not too far out of line with what the Association for the Study of Peak Oil in Europe has been projecting for Russia. Probably even more important was China's announcement at a meeting, and unfortunately I don't have that reference. A friend of mine attended it in Washington, is they expect world peak oil to be about 2012. The Association for the Study of Peak Oil thinks that the light sweet crude, the what we call normal oil, may have peaked this year, and they expect that all the sort of conventional oils, which includes deep water and natural gas liquids, that'll peak in 2010. So we're starting to see a pretty strong consensus for roughly the period of, say, between 2010 and 2014.
All right. I mean, That is the peak, but however long it took us to get to this point, building our economy on petroleum, and I don't know, just the fact that we're using more and more oil every year. How long do you think after the peak that we'll, you know, be able to keep up our energy use if we don't adopt solutions for change?
Well, it's going to just start declining from there on out. There is somewhat of a plateau at the peak, but the main thing is that we're not going to be having increasing amounts of oil, and that's what our economy is dependent upon. It's dependent upon having 2 million barrels more oil the next year than the year before. And so that's why it's going to throw a wrench in our whole economic system, which is predicated on growth. And I was just reading something recently that said, to give you a sense of how quick the decline actually is, by 2030, we would be using 60% less oil than we would have projected to use. So it's quite a hit.
And as this happens, what is that going to do to oil prices? Because I know it's our tendency to get that cheap oil first. So will we see skyrockets in petroleum prices, or...
Well, I think I would say I don't know if we're skyrocketing, but if you look at the price of oil, where it was in 1998, I think it was like $12 to $15 a barrel, and now it's running about 60, and it hit 70 a couple of months ago. But maybe even more important to that is we sort of focus on the oil. We we suddenly have really had an enormous blow come with natural gas. And I think roughly in 1998, natural gas was $2 per million cubic feet, and now it's up to around 12 and hit 14 just a few weeks ago. So, and by the way, coal has also doubled in price in the last 12 months. So we're going to see that as these shortages appear, we're not going to be able to predict everything because a natural disaster may affect, say, gas more extreme than oil. So we're going to see the cost of these things going up on all the fossil fuels, coal, natural gas, oil, as well as uranium, which has also doubled in the last 18 months.
All right. I know we mentioned a little bit earlier about some of the solutions that your organization has. I guess, do you want to just maybe give us something you talked about at your conference on peak oil, maybe Agraria, some sort of solutions, just, I don't know, either for people or for the society as a whole to, you know, get rid of our dependency on oil?
Well, I think over the long run, we're going to see a lot of decentralization of the country, and that's where our Agraria proposal fits in. Agraria is a model post-peak oil community that could be developed around small towns and rural areas as a way to kind of capture some of the outgoing migration from large cities, because cities will be unsustainable, and a way that to bring people back onto the land and being engaged in farmland. So the community is centered upon having low-energy housing of where the members are involved in organic agriculture, and also there's a place for local occupations to flourish. So we see this as one of the models for the society in the future.
There's another thing that we've done, and we've had on our website for some time, is a proposal for a cell phone-based ride-sharing system, which could be implemented very, very quickly for, you know, probably $10 or $20 million, which would allow us immediately to start sharing cars so that instead of an SUV with one person in it, you could have six people in it. And so that's what I see is going to be, as the prices go up, a very, very rapid transition into ride sharing, because there won't be time to build up a mass transit system. The other thing we're working on, and what came out of our conference, is we proposed a leadership program for people who wanted to work with us in specific areas, and we started some of these. We're starting an educational program from a series of volunteers. We're giving the first course in Chicago. We're starting an energy information analysis system so that people can start making energy decisions easy without going through the complex process of deciding whether it's watts, BTUs, or gallons. And then we're going into some specific short-range projects, which is to tell people and give them the tools for, say, making window covers, because 9% of the energy goes out the windows, and this is something that could be done rapidly. So we have both short-range and long-range solutions that we're focusing on.
All right, that's all very good. For a lot of people who either didn't know or just missed your conference, you actually have DVDs of some of the speeches?
We do. We had over 350 people at our conference. It was the second U.S. conference on peak oil and community solutions. And we have a report on the conference on our website, www.communitysolution.org. And folks can also order the DVDs from the conference from there.
All right. That all sounds very good. It's been great having you. Megan Quinn, Pat Murphy, do you have any last words, last comments?
Well, there's going to be a conference next week in Denver, the first conference of the American group for the Association Study of Peak Oil, and I'll be talking there. And also Megan will be showing a film that we're developing on what happened in Cuba. So if anybody's like to get to go to that conference in Denver, it's going to be very interesting.
All right. Well, we appreciate having you on, as always, and thanks again.
Well, thanks. Thank you for your work.
Good to talk to you again.
You too, guys. Thanks. And maybe we'll have you back on the air again to get an update here and see what you're up to in a few months.
Okay.
Great. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.